Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale, the 36th Marriage Equality State. I'm Nate Klarfeld, and this is Stonewall Live, the best of gay, lesbian, book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Lev Raphael again, the prolific writer, author of over 10 Nick Hoffman mysteries, several other novels, and I'm just going to get right into it. Good evening, Lev.
Yes, good evening, and congratulations on being another free state in America, bringing the total up to 36, plus the District of Columbia, which, of course, should be a state, so that would make it 37.
Right, right. And then we should get Puerto Rico into this, don't you think?
Yes, seriously, you know, taxation without representation. Didn't we fight a war about that?
I think we did, like a Tea Party or something. Oh,
the
good Tea Party. The good Tea Party, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, as many of you probably already know, because Lev Raphael is one of the gay and lesbian. But I only call him a gay and lesbian author. I call him an author whose books just happen to have a fabulous man. Many of them do. Named Nick Hoffman. The Nick Hoffman Mysteries. This is number 10. Is that right?
No, actually, it's number 8.
8. Oh, I'm getting them wrong. They're sitting on my bookshelf. I could read, but it's okay. It's too hard. All right, so we're number 8. Number 8 in a series. When did the first one start? How many years ago did Nick appear?
Nick appeared in 1996.
Okay.
So he's been around a while, and he's seen a lot. Yep. He's seen a lot of change in the country, and a lot of things go wrong, and that's why I had to write this book, because he had to have his say about what's going wrong with America today.
Yeah, right. So Nick has a dashing husband, Stefan, and do you have a dashing husband also?
Oh, well, I do, but I don't think he dashes very much. He has some knee trouble, so no, he's not much of a dasher. Yeah, you know, it's always funny. People ask me, you know, Nick and Stefan are gourmet cooks, and people ask me, are you a gourmet cook? And I say,
right.
No. You know, Nick and Stefan have this marvelous summer home, and,
right.
You know,
right.
And people say, do you have this marvelous summer home? And I say, no, that's because they're fiction, and I'm not. You know, and although there was a period when they had a cottage on Lake Michigan, and people kept asking me if they could borrow my cottage. I'm serious. It was really wonderful because
right.
I described it in so much detail, and it sounded like cottages that they knew. And I was dying to give people a key and a map and see if they would actually drive up there. That would have been mean, but it kind of would have been funny to see if they showed up at somebody's house and said, well, Lev Raphael sent us, you know. What are you doing in our summer cottage, you know?
Or if it was
I take that as a real compliment, because when you write a first person narrator, if people think that it's so real and ask you, well, is that you? Is that your life? Then that means that you've really been successful. And so that always that never bothers me. That makes me feel good as a writer.
Good. And you are an academic also, personally.
No. I escaped academia many, many years ago.
Okay.
And only recently I was invited back as a guest after I published my 24th book. The English department at Michigan State noticed, and they thought I might have something to teach the creative writing students, so they asked me if I would like to teach. And I said, sure, I'd love to, and I absolutely adore it. I hadn't done it in a long time, and I really love working with students. I know a lot more about writing now that I've written so many books than I did when I was much younger. And And it's a great experience. And, you know, this past summer I got to go with a bunch of students to London for 6 weeks. I mean, it was really spectacular.
Good.
I was teaching writing and teaching literature. And
it was
a dream come true. And all because, I'm a local writer and the school wanted me to teach. So
Great. So Nick Hoffman and Stefan, the real Nick Hoffman, not you, and Stefan are in academia, and they this is what got me back, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago when I started reading your books, and I stumbled on them quite accidentally, and there it talks about academia in a way that...
I hope you didn't hurt yourself stumbling on them.
No, I didn't.
Okay, good.
Didn't stumble that hard. You talk about I'm a civilian. I've never been a teacher in higher education. I've been through higher education with multiple college degrees and two careers, but I never really thought behind the wall of academia that it was such a petty, competitive, nasty, judgmental, dangerous world. And this is the world that Nick Hoffman peels away in every single one of your books. I mean, all of your books expose academia as not the prim and proper tea at 4 o'clock and, discussing, Jean-Paul Sartre in the afternoon and stuff like that. And it's just basically a dog eat dog corporation.
Oh yeah, very. It's a very corporate society. It's got all the cruelty of big business. It's just like organized crime in terms of punishing people who step out of line.
Right.
It's got the hypocrisy of politics, and it's got the big egos of professional sports. So it's a perfect environment for murder and mystery and thrillers and suspense and for satire. That's not everybody in it, but there's enough in it, and there's enough contrast between what people think is going on the surface or what they see on the surface and what's going on behind the scenes to make for lots of entertaining stories for writers. I mean, I speak at a lot of universities because my work is taught at the schools around the country, and pretty much everywhere I go, at some point at a dinner or a lunch or drinks or coffee, someone will take me aside and start whispering to me about some academic scandal. And, it's incredibly juicy material. People will sometimes even read to me scathing emails that people have sent to each other. And these are, basically sometimes it's just bald men arguing over a comb, but you can't believe how petty it is. But sometimes the stakes can be really high if there's money involved and if there's prestige involved, because that's not, when people's egos are on the line, they can get pretty nasty. So it's a great environment for me to write mysteries in. But this one is a lot different because this is really a suspense novel. And it's called a novel of suspense. And that's because it's not about a dead body being found in chapter one and Nick having to figure out who committed the crime. It's about something terrible happening to Nick and Stefan in the beginning. And things escalating from there until something really horrible, even more horrible, happens at the end.
Right. Let me clue the listeners in a little bit, not giving anything away. Assault with a Deadly Lie, Lev Raphael's 24 books and the
25th
Nick
book. Yeah.
25th book and
can you believe it?
Nick, I know, it's like amazing. The 8th Nick Hoffman Mysteries is a it's a story, and I want to I don't want to use a cliche ripped from the headlines, but it is ripped from the headlines. A large part of the book has to do with the militarization of our police force and the brutality and the almost not law breaking but law ignoring system that we have created. And I know this book was done way before Ferguson, way before the Gardner case in New York, because I know it takes a while to get a book published and out and distributed. But basically, this book came out right at the cusp of the Ferguson issues, and then, of course, followed by the New York Gardner trials, and then the entire Black Lives Matter movement started as I'm reading this book. And it's just frightening. And then a lot of the book, of course, has to do with Nick and Stefan have a relationship that is touched by a horrible situation.
Stalking.
Stalking.
Yes, they're being stalked and they're the victims of violence, and it's very contemporary. I started it because about 4 or 5 years ago I was reading not just in the major newspapers, but I was starting to pick up I'm a news hound. I was starting to pick up stories in little local news stations about SWAT teams raiding the wrong person's house, about people being killed in SWAT team raids. And, I think in Orlando in 2010, there were dozens of arrests when SWAT team raids were enforcing laws in barbershops. They were raiding barbershops to see if people had licenses. I mean, SWAT teams are part of what I'm writing about. There are 45,000 raids a year. People don't realize that. That's over 150 a day. And they're being used for everything. And, you know, our police have become militarized. And you just ask anyone you know, and they'll tell you they've probably seen a SWAT team come out for almost anything. Now, that's not to say we don't need the police to protect us from all kinds of dangers. But, you know, I'll give you an example. There's a small town in Wisconsin I was reading about recently that got an armored personnel carrier that could withstand landmines. Now, this town had only 25,000 people. It had no murders. It had a very low crime rate. And there's never been a landmine in that town in its entire history. So why did they need that? Davis, California, a university town, got a tank from the Pentagon. What did they need a tank for? I mean, who are they protecting themselves from? And in fact, the citizens complained so much they had to send it back. So, so there's been a real shift of consciousness in the U.S. Since 9/11, and we are... our police have become militarized, and too often, as we've seen in Ferguson, and it's not just people of color, citizens, ordinary citizens, are seen as the enemy, which is really, really scary. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to take two, you know, middle-class people, professionals, and have them become the enemy and see what happens. And that's that's the core of the book.
Right. Instead of protecting citizens, their mission is now to kill an enemy before, almost proactive.
Right. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. And that is very scary because we are used, many of us grew up with the idea of officer friendly. You know, the cop is officer friendly. He or she is there to help you and get you out of trouble. But many of the, you know, if you watch a lot of training videos for police forces, they are, you feel like you're watching a military training video. You know, they are crawling through the underbrush, throwing hand grenades. And so it's kind of scary. And I felt compelled to write this book. You know, every book has its own logic, its own history, and different books have different reasons. This book was really compelled by what I saw going on in the country, and I thought, I've got to write about it. And you know, I'm a novelist, so that was the natural thing for me to do, was to take a novel and craft it to be about these concerns. And you know, Nick has a lot to say about a lot of things, so he has a lot to say here, as does a great defense attorney that who takes his side.
Mm-hmm. Who you described completely down to her shoes.
Yes, well, it is a gay mystery, you know. And Nick and Stefan, you know, part of what I'm doing in the book is describing the good life they have, so that the reader realizes how quickly it could be taken away from them.
Right.
And, you know, I have to say that my own personal history as the son of Holocaust survivors impacts this book particularly because I've always grown up with the knowledge that everything that my parents had when they were growing up was ripped from them. Their homes, their families, their countries. I mean, and they their culture, and the Nazis tried to destroy it all, including their language. right. You know, their sacred books, you name it. So,
right.
So that's always been at the back of my head. And,
right.
You know, I'm not saying that we live in a fascist state. I would never say that. But we do live in a militarized state, which is
right.
pretty scary.
Yeah, it gets close. We talked about this before when I interviewed you on another occasion. I'm also the son of Holocaust survivors. Both my parents were, and it always, you know, it's almost like I have PTSD when I read a mystery novel where the police are hurting innocent citizens. It seems like, oh my God, that can't happen. But you're right. Nothing is permanent, and your life can change, you know, on a dime. And you do mention that one. I think is it Stefan's parents are Holocaust survivors, correct?
Yeah,
in the book. But,
and he shows up. You may be thinking of 10 books because actually there is a 9th book that's connected to the mystery series, Winter Eyes, which
yes.
is a novel in which Stefan first appeared back before the mystery series.
Okay.
Started.
That's
so that's kind yeah. of 10. That's close to 10. And
right.
And I may have talked once about doing another novel about Stefan himself. So
right.
that kind of brings it to 10.
Yeah, I forgot about. Yeah, I forgot. Winter Eyes was only half the couple.
Right, right. It was just
right.
him. It was him. It was him growing up, and you know,
right.
and I knew at the end of that novel that he had to find love, and he had to find somebody with a. He's
right.
a pretty serious guy, so I had to pair him with someone with a sense of humor.
Right, and somebody who would get into trouble and kind of bring him out of his shell.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. You said you're teaching writing now. Is that at Michigan State University?
Yeah, I actually have been at Michigan State University. Yeah, I've been lucky because they've given me a choice of things. So I've been able to teach creative writing.
Uh-huh.
I've taught American Jewish literature. I've also taught the mystery novel. I just teach one course a semester. And
wow.
I've had amazing, amazing students. I mean, and I've also
yeah.
been able to mentor some through independent study. And it's just I get to pass on to some students what was given to me when I was a college student by some really fine teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful feeling. It's really it's deeply moving. I felt that a lot as when I was in London because that was such an intense experience
uh-huh.
of 6 weeks being with students in different venues outside of the classroom too. So I feel really lucky. You know, what can I say? I'm living my dream. I wanted to be a writer when
exactly.
I was in second grade, and I am. You know, I'm not on the bestseller list, but you know, I never even heard of the bestseller list when I was on second grade, so that wasn't
right.
part of my dream.
Good for you. Now that's great. No, really, because you hear about how education, at least on the street, has been diluted, and college graduates can't read or write or don't want to, and you know, and whether the online universities are taking over, and we're going to be turned into these automatons that don't write and don't read and only communicate through 140 character Twitters. So it's refreshing to hear someone like you say that there's hope in universities and wonderful students coming out that are going to be creative, that are going to create something and not just consume something. I have this strange fear that this younger generation isn't going to create, they're just going to consume. They consume literature, but they don't really make literature. They consume art, but they don't really make art. It seems like it's a one way. But I'm glad.
Well,
to
not
hear
from
you
my
that.
Perspective, as someone who's encountered so many fine writers,
yeah.
Just an amazing number of fine writers. So, and I can't imagine that that Michigan State University is the only school, even in the Midwest, that has so many good writers. So
uh-huh.
I think there are a lot of them out there. I think the problem is that, like most of us, it's very easy to be distracted nowadays. So it's
uh-huh.
hard to read. It's hard to find time to read. It's hard to make time to read. And honestly, that's why this book is not 400 or 500 pages long. It's closer to 250.
Right.
It's closer
I read it
to 200. I did not want to make to write a very long book because I wanted it to be short, intense, and fast paced. right. So that someone could just sit down and read it in a night or a night or two and just be blown away.
Sure. That's great. Listen, I've got a couple of questions from the chat room, really funny ones,
sure.
Actually. Did it, Assault with a Deadly Lie, was that your title, that, or did you write the title at the end? What, did you have a working title? That's the question.
That was my very first title. That's a great
okay.
question. It just popped into my head. I saw it. And when they read the book, they'll see exactly why
sure.
I picked that. I thought,
right.
I'm going to write this book about Nick and Stefan in this situation, and I'm going to call it Assault with a Deadly Lie. Titles
okay.
either come to me right away, or I just go through agony trying to pick them.
Uh-huh. So you do have working titles, and you just find one when you're done, or
sometimes I change them when I'm done, or, you know,
uh-huh.
But pretty much I often get the title very early on. For me, sometimes the title's like the doorway into the book.
Okay.
You know, that's
got it.
Because it opens everything up, because it directs me to where I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Has an editor ever tried to change a title? That's another question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. And sometimes they've offered very good changes. I don't have trouble with being edited. I'm not
okay.
a prima donna. I'm not a
uh-huh.
diva. I have had dozens of really good editors in magazines and in publishing companies, and
good.
I welcome it. If somebody can make my work better, I am very, very happy. I know that my work can always be improved, and I would rather have it be as good as possible when it's published, so that when I'm doing a reading, I'm not reading along and then thinking, oh my God, I can't believe I said that.
This
is
yeah.
really a bad sentence.
Right, right. Well, that happens to all of us. Any movement to have the Nick Hoffman Mysteries made into a film or series?
No, none yet, but I think this one would be perfect for
great.
A movie, especially given what's happening right now. So
right.
I just haven't nobody has approached me. The one person who did approach me was under the impression that I had led a much more colorful life than I had, because I had put a bogus biography on my website initially, where I said I'd been born on the Queen Mary and struck
oh,
by lightning at the age of three and became a piano prodigy. I just made stuff up just because I was tired of reading really straight bios
right.
on people's websites. And
right.
I thought, if this guy doesn't have a sense of humor, I don't think he should be involved with my movie.
I don't think so either. Or
yeah,
series.
Really.
Yeah,
serious.
There's so many different outlets now. I'm going to quickly talk. This is another question on how to get published. We had a question come. I have a very prolific person in the chat room asking me questions. How to get published? Well, good luck. Publishing has changed a lot in all the world. I have been involved in Stonewall National Museum and Archives, which is the largest gay and lesbian library in the world now. And I have seen publishing houses come and go, big ones, beautiful ones, well-established ones, and it's a nightmare out there for authors to find a publisher. Many of people, of course, are going to self-publishing, which is another whole quagmire. You're very fortunate. I think the last few have been University of Wisconsin Press. Is that right?
Yeah, this is University of Wisconsin Press, and my memoir was University of Wisconsin Press. But I've also done some independent press books, because they were obviously too short to.
Uh-huh.
To interest the publisher, and that was okay. I think, you know, self-publishing is a good way to get started, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, or good holding action. I mean, you know, follow any path that works. That's
right.
What I say.
Right. You know, the only problem I have with some self-published, and of course I get people contact me all the time, not only here, but the library gets copies of self-published books that are just unedited with terrible grammatical errors and horrendous.
Quality is a problem. But, you know, I do also find quality issues in published books,
really?
Too. So,
I've,
you know,
I've,
from
yeah,
traditional published.
Sure. I used to catch things in regular books, and I used to love writing my notes saying, you didn't do that right. But yeah, that's funny. But it's almost a democratization of the publishing industry. The fact that anybody can sit down at a computer and publish their blogs or their memoirs or their diary, get it up there, get it on Amazon, and then just go out and push it. As you have to do a lot of your own self-promotion. You have a website. You tour the country with your books.
Right. I also do a blog on the Huffington Post, and I've been doing that for 4 years. And I think one of the first things people need to do if they are interested in publishing is to start blogging.
Right.
And to develop an audience and develop a fan base and a platform.
Sure.
And there are lots of ways to build an audience before you even start publishing. But also you need to learn the craft,
and
you need to go to workshops. You need to take classes. You need to go to join a writer's group. There's a lot to do.
There is a lot to do, and I think a lot of people don't realize that. They have this great idea. Some people are very good, prose writers, but they don't know how to do dialogue. I mean, this is just mechanics when I'm reading these books, or they can do dialogue, but they can't do a description. I mean, so that you do have to take workshops, you do have to push yourself, you have to be mentored. I believe that's the issue. I think I think a lot of people have to, they miss that little point where you need to be mentored and look at a piece of work and say, oh, this is why. Why is this book so interesting? Why was I able to read Nick Hoffman mysteries in one night? And say they're fun. I have fun reading mysteries, and I have fun reading mysteries where I can identify with the characters. And of course, as a gay man, and I'm a lot older than these people, but as a gay man, of course, I can identify with most of the things going on there, and especially in relationships. And one of the things that you do very well, and I really caught it in this book more than the others, is the relationship between Nick and Stefan. And this book was, of course, tested. Things like trauma, emotional and physical trauma, test relationships. And
absolutely.
This particular test really, I felt more strain in this one than even the ones where there was infidelity issues or infidelity thoughts and stuff like that. That didn't really, but this one really got a little bit hairy with their relationship. And so that's how did you do that? I mean, you probably have not a formula, but you know the craft on how to do that. I'm a reader. I don't write and I talk a lot, but I wouldn't know the first thing about how to put together a tense situation where on three pages you get into all these emotional issues of an interpersonal relationship. It would take me 12 pages to say hello, but that's okay.
Well, it's the craft, it's the experience, it's the having written things like it before, it's knowing human psychology, it's having studied psychology separately, it's having studied PTSD, it's having been through some stressful situations with family and friends, it's everything. Every time you sit down and write as a writer, all of your life experience is focused in that one moment, whether you know it or not. Everything is there right at your fingertips, which is a wonderful feeling. And sometimes it can be humbling because you can be stuck and not know where to go. But oftentimes it's just great because your experience is universal. And even though Nick and Stefan are older than some other people who might read the book, everybody has suffered, What they go through is what many people go through in this country, which is personal trauma. They've been shocked out of their ordinary existence, just like people who've been in a car accident, or a tornado, a hurricane, been robbed, been given a cancer diagnosis, have had anything happen to them that says your life will never be the same.
Right, exactly.
That can happen to all of us at any moment.
We have 30 seconds left. Do any last words to our audience?
Well, if all I can say is if you want to write and you want to write more than anything else in the world, do not let anyone stop you. But the most important thing in being a writer is to read absolutely everything you can. That's what my mentor told me in college, and it's the best advice I've ever gotten.
And thank you, Lev, and good night from Fort Lauderdale. Thanks a lot. This is great.
Thank
a lot
you.
Of fun.
It was great talking to you.
Always. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Take care.